Welcome to Dinosaur George Kids, a show for anyone who loves dinosaurs. Dinosaur George has studied paleontology for over 50 years and has performed live to over 4 million students across the world. So sit back and enjoy today's show. Now, here's Dinosaur George.
Hey there, future paleontologists. I'm Dinosaur George. Welcome to the podcast. I hope you are doing well. I hope you all are having a good summer if you happen to live in a country where it's summer right now. For those of you that live where it's winter, I hope you're having a great winter. It's always great to be in here again to record. A couple of things going on. Looks like I finally just about finished traveling in my museum for the summertime. Now, my traveling museum goes into like elementary schools and sometimes into cities and different community events. And I think I've only got one or two more shows scheduled for July, and it looks like I'm going to be off most of August, which means that I'll be able to spend a little more time out at my museum and store at Trader's Village, located in San Antonio. So for those of you that might be traveling to Texas, the San Antonio area, if you're coming out there, I certainly hope I get a chance to meet you all. We are now at 798,000 downloads of this podcast. We are very quickly approaching the 1 million mark. That is phenomenal. You know, I started this podcast during the pandemic. I used to host an adult podcast, which I liked a lot. But then during the pandemic, I heard from so many parents that said, look, our kids are stuck at home. We can't go anywhere. Can you maybe do a podcast for them? And I thought, yeah, you know what? I'll do it. And we'll see. You know, maybe I'll do it for a month. Maybe I'll do it for a couple of months. And we'll see if people like it. Well, the response was very good. And I'm very, very proud to say that we are now getting very close to hitting that 1 million download mark. Now, what does download mean? That doesn't mean there's 1 million people that heard it. What that means is the podcast has been listened to nearly a million people. Now, one person might have listened to all 85 podcasts. So that doesn't just count as one. That counts as somebody listening to 85. That's part of this number. So when I say that we're about to reach the 1 million mark, it doesn't mean that 1 million people have heard it. That means when we get to that mark, people have heard it 1 million times. And that's very exciting, and that's hard to believe. But anyway, something else kind of fun. We've now been heard in 177 countries around the world. For the longest time, it was 175. Then it finally jumped up to 176. But it stayed at 176 for a very long time. I believe it did. And now it's 177. Now, I don't know which country is the newest to listen, but I will say that no matter what that country is, no matter who you are or where you live, thank you so very much for listening to this podcast. You make it so much fun for me. I enjoy it greatly. And we're now heard in 14,182 cities all over the world. 14,182 cities around the world, people hear this podcast. So for all of you, I'm going to count every single one of you, 14,182. I'm going to say thank you to each one of you. Here we go. City number one, thank you. City number two, thank you. City number three, thank you. City number four, thank you. City number five, thank you. We're going to take a brief moment to come back. When we come back, I'll continue to count, okay? Thank you very much. 9,142, city. Thank you. 9,143, thank you. $11,966. Thank you. 967. Thank you. 14,181. Thank you. And city, 14,182. Thank you. Seriously, thank you all so very much for being listeners all around the world. All right, a couple of shout outs to give. First of all, there was a young man named Elliotosaurus. His parents wanted so bad for me to be able to do a live lesson for him on his birthday. But unfortunately, my schedule doesn't allow me to do them. So I said, since I can't do the live lesson, at least let me give him a shout out. So on the 25th of July will be Elliotosaurus's birthday. Elliotosaurus, I'm very sorry that I wasn't able to do a live lesson with you. I'm so sorry I couldn't. But I will say this, you guys, I'm looking at my calendar. Maybe I can do a couple. I don't know. At this point, I don't think I can. So anyway, so happy early birthday to you, Elliotosaurus. And I'm so sorry that I was unable to do your lesson that your mom wanted to get for you, your parents wanted to get for you. All right. Today, I was out at the museum located at Trader's Village in San Antonio, Texas. For any of you who might be coming to San Antonio, go to my website, dinosaurgeorge.com. Click on the Visit Our Museum, and you can see all the directions. Well, today I was there, and guess what? I had a couple of visitors. First, Canyon and his sister JoJo came all the way from Louisiana. All the way from Louisiana to San Antonio, Texas. So I got a chance to meet them and their family. I hope you guys enjoyed the day. It was very special for me. I'm so happy I got to meet you all. I hope you enjoyed it. And then Velociraptor Maddox came up to me. Now, he lives in Oklahoma, and he and his mom stopped in. And Velociraptor Maddox walked right up to me and said, "I'm Velociraptor Maddox." And I thought, that is the coolest thing. I am so glad that you're a member of the club and that you guys came to see me as well. There is one thing, though, Velociraptor Maddox, that I need to say. One thing. And that is this, kid. If you ever call me El Stinko again, you are going to pay. That goes for all of you. See, El Stinko. Let me explain who El Stinko is for my new listeners. El Stinko is a superhero. Now, this superhero has the mighty power of stink bombs that come out from underneath his armpits. Yes, El Stinko can simply raise his arms in the air, and the smell is so powerful, it can actually stop a dinosaur. Now, some kids, like this Maddox kid, thinks I'm El Stinko. Well, if I was El Stinko, that would mean that I smell bad. And clearly, that's not the case. Who is El Stinko? No one knows the identity of El Stinko. He's smarter than Batman, stronger than Superman, has greener teeth than the Hulk, and more beautiful hair than Wonder Woman. No one knows the identity of El Stinko. My little buddy, Avi, who lives in New Braunfels, Texas, came out to see me with his family and friends, and it was so nice seeing you again, Avi. You're getting to be so tall. Stop growing, kid. But great seeing mom again. Good seeing all of you. Thank you guys so much for coming out. And then Emmett from Lindell. Now, let me say this. Emmett lives in Lindell, Texas. This is a town in Texas called Lindell. Emmett's mom called me because she wanted to know what Emmett was going to donate a dollar for. She wanted to know. Well, for those of you that know, I have a dinosaur skeleton on exhibit in my museum in San Antonio of a 13-year-old Tyrannosaurus Rex. Its nickname is Tinker. Tinker is a T-Rex. This thing is amazing. Well, it's on exhibit in my museum, and I want to keep it there. I don't want to have to pack it up and send it back to the guy that owns it. I want to buy it. So we have a GoFundMe set up where I'm trying to raise some money to help me buy this thing. And I had mentioned in a podcast that you don't have to give a lot of money. Kids, I want you to remember, I know when I was young, I wanted my parents to buy me everything. I wanted to join a club. I wanted to get this toy. I wanted to, and when I was little, I didn't understand why they just didn't do it. Well, that's because they didn't think about all of the things they have to spend their money on. They have to buy food. They have to buy clothing. They have to have a place to live. They have to have a vehicle or at least a way to travel. So what I said was, I don't want you kids, if you would like to donate and help us keep this there, I hope you can. But I said, you only need to donate a dollar. You don't need to send a lot of money. Just a dollar. So Emmett was so nice. He wanted to donate a dollar, which they did. Thank you so very much for doing that, Emmett. I appreciate it. If any of you would like to donate a dollar, $1, then you can go to the website dinosaurgeorge.com, click on the Visit Our Museum, and down on that page, you will see a link to the GoFundMe. And if you can, that's great. If you can't, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can't spend money every single day on every single thing. So with that, let's talk about today's feature creature. I like this. This is a dinosaur and a group of dinosaurs that I need to do more things on. I love them very, very much. So let's go in and do a feature creature on this dinosaur.
It's time for our feature creature segment. If you would like to suggest a creature, go to the Dinosaur George Kids podcast page at dinosaurgeorge.com or post your suggestion on the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group page. Now, here is your feature creature.
Today's feature creature is Lambeosaurus. I love Lambeosaurus. Lambeosaurus is a member of a group of dinosaurs called hadrosaurs. We often call them duckbills because they have a big, flat beak. Now, the very first people that discovered the first duckbill named it hadrosaur, which in English means water lizard or water reptile. They guessed that because it had a beak like a duck, it probably lived its life in the water. Well, that turned out to be incorrect. Scientists are constantly making discoveries and sometimes guessing wrong. So sometimes we have to go back and correct the mistakes. Lambeosaurus is a hadrosaur. These are dinosaurs that probably spent the overwhelming majority of their life on land. They were living in forests. They weren't living in swamps. They certainly lived in swamps, but they didn't live in the water part of a swamp. In other words, when you think of a swamp, we always think of water, but swamps have a lot of land, lots of land around the water. And they're probably visiting there to be able to find plenty of plants, because since there's a lot of water, that means a lot of plants. And so they probably visited them, but that doesn't mean they spent their whole life in a swamp in the water. They're living on land. Now, these animals are bipedal, semi-quadrupedal. What does that mean? What do those words mean? Bi means two, quadro means four. Bipedal means you walk on two legs. But hadrosaurs could also walk on four legs. They could lean forward and walk on all fours. That's called a quadruped. So a biped always walks on two legs. A quadruped always walks on four legs. But something can be a biped semi-quadruped, which means sometimes. So they could walk on two or four legs. How do we know that? Two ways. One, when scientists put the skeletons together, you can see that the way the bones fit means this dinosaur could walk on two legs, or if it leaned forward, it could walk on four. But the other way is finding footprints where they find. See, the foot of a hadrosaur is different than a hand. The ones in the front, we don't call them front legs. Those are its arms. Well, the arms, the hands of a Lambeosaurus, and pretty much I think all hadrosaurs, is there weren't four fingers. They couldn't pick things up with their front hands. Their fingers were tightly stuck together and almost looks like a like the leg of a chair, like a straight sort of a pole. Would have been a weapon. So when they walk on those, they don't leave toe prints like you do with the back legs. Its back legs have three toes. You can clearly see those when they walk. So it almost looks like, have you guys ever seen like somebody who's hiking and they carry on their hands these long poles for hiking? That's kind of sort of what it would have looked like with Lambeosaurus and other hadrosaurs. The legs wouldn't have been, there wouldn't have been fingers. They would have been almost looked like a big sort of a rounded pole thing. So as they're walking, they're leaving very distinct footprints. Now, this dinosaur lived in the late Cretaceous period, about 75 to 76 million years ago. Lambeosaurus, this is kind of neat. It was named in honor of a Canadian paleontologist named Lawrence Lamb, who discovered the first one back in 1923. The name Lambeosaurus in English means lamb's lizard. Dr. Lamb, or I think Lawrence Lamb was a paleontologist, maybe was a doctor of paleontology, maybe not, but it was named in honor. See, when you discover a dinosaur, if you can prove that it's a new species that nobody ever found before, and you describe it properly, you're allowed to give it a name. You can name it after something interesting about it. You can name it after a place, or you can name it in honor of a person. Utah Raptor was given the name Utah Raptor because it was discovered in Utah. Nice job, everyone. Texasaurus lived in Texas. I don't know a saurus lived in. I don't know. Okay, so what? There's no I don't know a saurus. Who wrote that on my paper? Look, I don't know what's going on around here, but something isn't right. Okay, so anyway, in the case of Lambeosaurus, it was named after this person. Now, here's something that can be confusing, so I want you to listen closely. I've talked about this before. Some of you know this, but I want to cover this. All animals have a first and last name. All animals. Dinosaurs are the same way. All dinosaurs have a first and last name. One is called the genus name. The last name is called the species name. You can have more than one dinosaur that has the same genus name. That means a first name. But you cannot have two different dinosaurs that have the same species name. They discovered three kinds of Lambeosauruses. Each one was Lambeosaurus, but each was a little bit different enough to where they thought, this is not the exact same animal. So there are three dinosaurs named Lambeosaurus, but they all have a different last name. There's Lambeosaurus lambii, Lambeosaurus magnacristatus, and then Lambeosaurus paucadens. Their first name is all Lambeosaurus. Their last name is different because each one of them is a little bit different enough to where they believe it's a different species. Lambeosaurus, pretty big dinosaur, measured between 10 to 15 meters. That's around 33 to 49 feet long. Listen, man, that's rivaling Tyrannosaurus Rex in size. It has a very powerful tail. These tails would have been excellent weapons. So many people look at hadrosaurs, at duckbills, and they think there's no weapon. I've already mentioned two weapons. One is the tail. The other is those front feet, the front hands. They could punch with those things. Listen, even the back feet could be a weapon they could kick. That's a tremendous amount of power. But the most interesting thing about this dinosaur is the crest on its head. It has a crest on its head. Now, this is also something that can be confusing. What is a crest? What is a horn? What is a spike? And how are they different? Okay. A spike is something usually found on the body, including the tail. Spikes are found on the body, including the tail. Crests are almost always connected to the top of the head. And then horns are things that stick off of the skull and point away. Those are horns. Now, Triceratops has a shield or a frill. That's also different from a crest. A crest like Dilophosaurus has a crest. Who else? Cryolophosaurus has a crest. Parasaurolophus has a crest. Those are the things on the head that had probably one of two functions, or maybe two functions. One was to make sound. Some scientists believe that that hadrosaurs that have crests, and they don't all have crests, some of them were crested, some of them were not. Anatotitan, Edmontosaurus, they do not have crests on their head. Those that do have the crest, that's Lambiosaurus, who else? Parasaurolophus, who else? Critosaurus, oh my gosh, who else? Corythosaurus, all of those have crests. Some scientists, and I agree with this, believe they were used to create sound. They made something called a resonating chamber. That means they could breathe air in and blow that air through the crest and out the nose and use it to make sound. If you want to create a crest, here's what you want to do. Ask mom or dad or grandma or whoever you might stay with that once a roll of toilet paper is empty and you have the tube, you know, the cardboard tube, take that tube and blow air through it. You will create a crest. Kind of put your lips together and let your lips kind of go and blow. And it'll make a sound. Because when air is moving through a tube or a tight space, it changes what the air sounds like. So different kind of crests made different kind of sound. So why would they want a crest? Why would they make sound? Wouldn't, if you made a lot of sound, wouldn't that mean that predators could hear you and they could come find you and eat you? Possibly. But here's the deal. What I believe is that they could make a sound that was so deep and so low, we couldn't hear them. Their voice was too low. Our ears cannot hear certain sounds that are very, very low. It's probably the same way with some dinosaurs. Do you know whales can make sounds that humans can't hear, but other whales can? Do you know elephants can make sounds that the human ear can't hear, but other elephants can? They are called subfrequencies. They're very low sounds. There's two reasons why crested hadrosaurs like Lambiosaurus would have made sound out of their crest. One was, of course, to communicate. But the other reason why it had a crest is so that its voice would be deeper. Because a deep, low voice travels farther than a high-pitched voice. People with a very high voice are harder to hear from a long way away because the sound waves they produce are not as wide and they don't go as far. So if you're a Lambiosaurus, sorry, I'm losing my voice because I just became a high-pitched person. If you're a Lambiosaurus and you want to know where your family, friends are, you can make a voice that travels a long way and then you listen carefully for somebody to respond. Now, it probably meant that carnivores couldn't hear it either. Maybe they couldn't hear it. So these hadrosaurs, like Lambiosaurus, could have been communicating with each other and nothing could hear them but them. We don't know if that's certain or not, but that's what I believe. Now, other scientists believe that those crests were probably brightly colored and they had bright crests for so other animals can see them. I have a project for all of you listeners. For any of you listeners who are part of the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group, and for all of you kids, that's completely free. You don't have to pay anything. If you are on the Dinosaur George Kids, you've got to make sure it's Dinosaur George Kids page, not the Dinosaur George page. That's my page as well, but that page I don't use for fun stuff like I'm talking about. What I would like you to do, I would like for you to do one of two things. Look through all of your toys, try to find any hadrosaurs, and take a picture and ask your parents to post them on the page so everybody can see. The other project I'd like for you to do is I would like for you to draw a picture of a hadrosaur like Lambiosaurus and make sure the crest is brightly colored. That's your project. If you would like a project, I would like for you to do that project, please. Draw a Lambiosaurus. It's spelled Lambiosaurus. Look it up online if you want to see what it looks like. Draw a picture of a Lambiosaurus or any duckbill. And if it has a crest, I'd like for you to use a bright color. It doesn't matter what color. I'd like for you to use your imagination. So some scientists believe that the bright color could attract a mate or maybe scare off a rival. Whatever the case is, these animals are herbivores. Now, that does not mean that they cannot be dangerous. I hear that a lot. Sometimes people will say, well, that's a plant eater. Can't hurt you. Yes, they can. They have to defend themselves from very big, dangerous meat eaters. Absolutely, they can defend themselves. Absolutely, they can. So even though it's an herbivore, that does not mean that it could not defend itself. Now, these animals, I told you, lived in the late Cretaceous. They're found in North America. They're found in areas like Wyoming, Montana, and Alberta, and British Columbia, and Canada. They are found on what is the side of what is something called the Western Anterior Seaway. Let me explain what that means. During the late Cretaceous period, a very shallow ocean split North America in half. On the eastern side, there were dinosaurs, and on the western side, there were dinosaurs. It is called the Western Anterior Seaway, and it divided North and South America. This is why Tyrannosaurus Rex isn't found in New Jersey, because Tyrannosaurus Rex lived on the western side of that sea. It could not swim hundreds and thousands of miles to reach land on the other side. So you have two different groups of dinosaurs on each side. So this one would have lived on the western side, on the Canadian, Montana, and Wyoming side. There have been footprints found where it may suggest that Lambiosaurus lived in herds. I absolutely believe that hadrosaurs lived in groups, no matter which species. I would take it a step further. I would even say that I think different species of hadrosaurs lived together. I think different species lived together. They would have helped to watch out for danger. They would have been able to help defend the group if they were attacked. They could use their communication skill. Think about this. I told you that Edmontosaurus did not have a crest on its head, right? It didn't have a crest on its head. So maybe it couldn't make the low-frequency sounds to communicate far away. But imagine if you are living alongside of Lambiosaurus and all of a sudden you saw all of the Lambiosauruses raise their head and look in a direction and they turn and start running. They've just given you an early notice. Maybe what happened is another Lambiosaurus farther away saw danger and sent a warning cry. And all these other ones took off running. Well, the Edmontosaurus could simply run with them. I don't know where we're going, but I know I'm going with these guys because somebody used a private two-way radio to communicate. And that radio was the crest on their head. So there, I believe they did. There's some footprints that suggested that they may have been walking in a herd because there was different sizes all walking the same direction. But again, there's something to remember. There's something to remember when it comes to footprints. Just because we see a group of footprints doesn't mean they were all made at the same time. Let's imagine that there is a river and along the shore it's muddy. And I walked by at 10 o'clock in the morning and I left my footprints. Now, your dad or your mom came along 2 hours later and they walked in the same direction I was going. Their footprints could be next to mine. Does that mean that your mom and dad and I were walking together? No. It means I walked by and hours later, mom and dad walked by. Now, let's imagine that a group of five of you kids are exploring and having fun and you walk through that mud. Now, what does it look like? It looks like three adults and a group of young animals walk together in this group. But that's not true. So when I say that there's evidence, remember, it can be very difficult sometimes to recognize whether or not footprints mean they were made at the same time. All right, for any of you that would be interested in becoming a Patreon Club member, Patreon is a great group. We have so many members. It's a lot of fun. There's three different levels that you can join. Triceratops level, which is $1 a month, and you get one live Zoom lesson with all the group, not private, but one group. If you become a Raptor Club member, that's $5 a month. You get a replica raptor claw mailed to you, no matter what country you live in. You get that mailed to you as a gift, and you get two live lessons a month, both on Zoom. Or you can join the top tier, which is the Tyrannosaurus Club. That one, you get a replica T-Rex tooth and a replica raptor claw. You get the two live lessons a month, but you also get birthday shout-outs, and your name can be chosen randomly to be interviewed. So if you would like to be a member of that, let's go ahead and listen to this. And when we come back, Letosaurus Rex is going to ask some of the questions that were submitted to us by you, the listeners.
Become a member of the Dinosaur George Patreon Club and join the fun. We offer different club levels, each with their own set of benefits. Private lessons, new discoveries, behind-the-scene access, and much more are all part of being a club member. Visit DinosaurGeorge.com and sign up today.
Do you have any questions about dinosaurs? Just ask Dinosaur George. You can post your questions on the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook page or click on the Dinosaur George podcast page at dinosaurgeorge.com. Questions are chosen at random, and you can submit as many as you want. And now, here's Dinosaur George.
It's LEDAQNA. Lita, what do we have?
Lucas H5 from...
What does it say? From Scottsdale, Arizona. I lived in Scottsdale, Arizona.
What other dinosaurs live with Spinosaurus?
Wow. There's a bunch living with Spinosaurus. I know there was an iguanodontid, I think Uranosaurus, Carcharodontosaurus. I'm trying to think of, I know there was some sauropods. I don't know all of them, but it was a pretty amazing environment. The fact that Spinosaurus and Carcharodontosaurus, two giants, could live together suggests that there was a lot of available food. And that means there was probably a lot of available dinosaurs. So I don't remember the specific ones, but I do know Carcharodontosaurus, and I do know, I want to say maybe Nigersaurus, and then I think Uranosaurus. Good questions.
Hi, Dinosaur George. We have two questions. One from Adominus Rex, age 7, Niza, Missouri, and one from his dad, from Emerson. How big was Spinosaurus's tail?
Well, the tail was not really big in the sense that there was something amazing about it, but it was long. I want to guess
Is it sail?
Sail. Yes, it's a sail. Okay.
I thought you messed it up.
I understand. Okay. Yes. So the sail, how tall was the sail? Now you're talking about big. I want to say that maybe it was about 6 feet tall. I think it was maybe 6 feet tall. It's big. I mean, it's taller than a grown man or an average man. So it was big. It was bigger than you think. That was a good question.
And from his dad said, since most modern raptors like eagles and hawks, the female is larger than males. And since birds are dinosaurs, do you think female dinosaurs, maybe at least theropods, were larger than males? Thanks for your time.
First of all, thank you guys for being so polite. And I'm very excited, Dad, that you are with your son asking questions and learning together. I appreciate that very much, and you're a good parent, and good for you. So it appears that female theropods, that means meat eaters, it appears that the females were larger than the males. Now, that's pretty common in the animal kingdom. You know, there's a lot of times where, like with birds, I believe with reptiles, usually the females are bigger. Not always, though, because like crocodiles, the males are way bigger. But I know that there are a lot of species where the female is larger than the male. I know that they did a study on trying to determine the different sexes within the dinosaurs, like which one is a male and which one is a female. And it appears that in every one, the females seem to be larger. Now, again, I'm talking about theropods. I don't know if that was the case with like ceratopsians or sauropods or hadrosaurs. I don't know if that's the case or not. But I do think with female, most paleontologists would say, yeah, they believe the females are larger.
Okay. Bricken age 7 said, is it possible that any ancient creatures could be what may people may think of as Bigfoot today?
Ah, that's a very good question. So was there something alive in the past that is either still alive today or people believe is still alive today? And he used Bigfoot as an example. There was a giant orangutan that was called Gigantopithecus. He looked like maybe a giant orangutan, or it was maybe he looked like an ape-like creature, but it was large. People used to think it was a gorilla, but it's not a gorilla. But that animal was big, probably covered with hair, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was found in or around the Mongolia area, and that happens to be an area where a lot of people have claimed to see what they call the Yeti. And so we know that Gigantopithecus was alive. We know it was alive. They found the fossils. There's no doubt it was alive. And it appears that humans may have seen it, may have come in contact with it, early humans. So is it possible that that animal still exists, or is it possible that stories have been told down through the ages of it? I don't know. The world is a big place, and I don't ever like to say that's not possible. We need to be more scientific about it. If there was an animal alive today that is what we would call a Bigfoot, my thoughts would be if it is ever found, it's going to be figured out to be either a Gigantopithecus or something closely related. So, yeah, I think there's a possibility of that. Maybe not a good one, but a possibility. All right?
Griffin Rafter, age 5, is wondering what kind of habitat is Paralophosaurus would have thrived in, swamp, forest, or coast east, etc.?
I think all of those would have been accurate. Parasaurolophus is a cousin of today's feature creature, Lambiosaurus. And so I believe that they lived in swamp-like environments. They lived in forests. They lived in the lowland forest, maybe the upland forest. I think at different times of the year, they went to different areas depending on the available food. I believe they probably migrated down to the coast to probably eat things like seaweed, which is they could get nutrition that otherwise they could never get any other place. So I think that they migrated or traveled in and out of every kind of environment. The only place they probably wouldn't do good in is like a desert environment where there's no water, no plants. They're just too big. They've got to have access to food. Yeah. So I think they would.
Even if there was cactus back then, it would still poke them and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, if there was maybe some sort of early cactus, yeah, could they even eat it? That's a very good question, Lita. That's a good point. So I think they lived in a variety of environments, and I think they would have done very well in anyone they lived in.
And he also said, thanks, El Stinko.
Oh, thanks, El Stinko. Wait, what? You said what?
El Stinko.
What is El Stinko? Me. Okay, so wait, what? No, I didn't say that. You said that. Okay, keep reading. Let's go.
Griffin Raptor, age 5, from Polliver, said, would like to know if there were any prehistoric ants, and if so, what were they like?
Prehistoric ants? Yeah, there were. I will tell you this. I've seen a lot of ants trapped in amber. Amber is tree sap that over time becomes hardened, and anything that got stuck in it would be perfectly preserved. They wouldn't fossilize, they would be preserved. And I've seen lots and lots of ants. Now, they're very small, and they don't look any different than ants today. The problem with ants and a lot of insects is they don't always fossilize very easily. Like, there's not a lot of things there. A lot of it, you know, just gets turned to dust. So I am unaware of any giant ant. You know, if you're asking the question because you're interested, could there be some sort of giant ant? I don't know if there was. I don't study prehistoric insects as much, but I have seen tons and tons of ants trapped in amber, and they look no different than the ants today. Very good. Oh, there was also prehistoric uncles. Prehistoric aunt, prehistoric uncle. Get it, aunt and uncle? That was hilarious.
That's not funny.
That was hilarious.
That's not funny.
You should be laughing right now because I made a good joke about an aunt and an uncle.
Ha, ha, ha. I'm laughing.
Okay, thank you for laughing. Wait, that sounded kind of sarcastic. All right, let's keep going. You got any more?
Nope, that's it.
That's it. All right, listen, if you would like to have a chance to have your question read and answered.
By me.
By Lita. Lita Saurus. Lita Saurus Rex, right?
Yeah.
Right. If you would like that opportunity.
Definitely not Lita Raptor.
Okay, yeah, I said Lita
Don't
Raptor once before.
Call me Lita Raptor.
Yeah. So, in fact, you can even write to Lita, L-E-D-A. You can go to our website, dinosaurgeorge.com, and click on the podcast page. And at the bottom of that page, there's a form you can fill out. Or you can post questions on the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group, and we'll try to read them there. Lita, anything to say to all of our listeners all over the world?
Bye. Be kind. Be great dinos.
All right, Lita, thank you so much. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Now let's get into...
Who would win? What if two different prehistoric creatures fought? Who would win? T-Rex versus a giant wolf? Raptor versus terror bird? Spinosaurus versus Triceratops? You choose the animals, and Dinosaur George will size them up and pick a winner. Now, get ready. It's time to find out who would win.
All right. I absolutely love the Who Would Wins. I think they're so much fun. And I know a lot of you really like them as well. So what I've decided to do is spend more time on Who Would Wins by doing a couple of extras. So let's go. Now, remember, Who Would Wins are submitted by T-Rex members. Sometimes we might do a Who Would Win like off of the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group page, which, by the way, I didn't have time to jump over and mention some of your pictures and drawings and artwork, but I want you to know I look at all of it, and I'm so proud of all of you for sending that. So maybe on the next podcast, I'll try to highlight some of those. But anyway, if you're a T-Rex member, you can submit them. So all of these are submitted by T-Rex members. Let's go. Megaleodon wants to know who would win. One Giganotosaurus and a Carnotaurus versus 25 Ankylosauruses being ridden by 30 cavemen. Wow, that's crazy. Well, I can tell you right now, I don't think anything is going to beat 25 Ankylosauruses. Now, the cavemen riding on the back, they're going to have a little bit of trouble because they're simply going to be picked off. They're going to be lunch. So I would say the winner is Ankylosaurus. The loser would be Giganotosaurus, Carnotaurus, and 30 cavemen. All right. Parasaurophilosaurus wants to know Diplodocus versus two T-Rexes. Hey, that's an interesting one. That's an interesting one. Wow. Okay, Diplodocus versus two T-Rexes. Even though Diplodocus is gigantic, I don't think it could hold up to two T-Rexes. Because I suspect these T-Rexes, if they're hunting together, they're probably family members or at least siblings. And they've probably done this before, and therefore they're better at it. So I would suggest in this particular scenario, Diplodocus, although he could be dangerous, and listen, there's a good chance Diplodocus could take out one of those T-Rexes with a direct hit from the tail. Maybe that changes it very quickly, but I'm still going to give this battle to two Tyrannosaurus Rexes. He also wants to know Mosasaurus versus two great white sharks versus El Stinko in a swimming suit. Okay, I don't even know who El Stinko is. No one knows the identity of El Stinko. I don't even know. How would I know if El Stinko is going to win? How would I know? Okay. So Mosasaurus versus two great whites versus me versus El Stinko. Okay. So, what are you laughing at? What are you laughing at? Knock it off. Okay. Mosasaurus. Two great white sharks. Wow. Too much for a Mosasaur, even though I love Mosasaurs. And even though Mosasaurs are big, I think two great whites, again, the deciding factor for me when it comes to talking about sea animal fights, does one breathe air? Does it have to go up to the surface and breathe air? When it does, that's going to cause a huge problem. So in my opinion, I think the two great whites would win. Okay, Casey Raptor would like to know who would win between Utah Raptor versus T-Rex versus two megalodons versus Dinosaur George. Why on earth would you want me to fight these animals you just listed? And he said he'd like to add Dinosaur George doesn't have any stink bombs. Sorry. Okay, listen. First of all, Casey Raptor, I don't have stink bombs because I'm not El Stinko. So don't even start that rumor, child. I don't like that. Don't anybody in this place call me El Stinko. Okay, let's keep going. If there's a megalodon involved, that fight's going to be in the ocean. And there's absolutely no chance Utah Raptor or T-Rex could win. There's no chance. They just can't. First, in order to fight megalodon, they're going to have to be in deep water, and they just don't stand a chance. As for me, yeah, like I'm going to win against any of these animals by myself. I have to fight all three of them? Really? And you're not even going to let me use my number one weapon? Let's keep going. Kyle, age 6, from Ireland, would like to know who would win between Dinosaur George versus Giganotosaurus. Okay, would somebody please tell me why everybody keeps putting me in these battles? What is with you kids? Are you happy to see me get eaten? What did I ever do to any of you that makes you want to see me get bitten? You think it's hilarious when Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor shows up and attacks me? You think it's hilarious to put me in these fights? What about my feeling? What about my feelings, kids? What about my... Are you laughing? Oh, you're all in big trouble. Let's keep going. Pyrocantha Lincoln, age 6, wants to know who would win between Scorpius Rex versus Indoraptor versus Raptor Blue. Wow. I think Scorpius Rex is the biggest. I think Indoraptor is the fastest. But I think Raptor Blue is the more intelligent. And maybe that would help. But what I honestly believe would happen is I think Scorpius Rex is actually going to be the winner in this battle just because of the spikes on its tail. I think it just gives it too much of a weapon. So I would go with Scorpius Rex. That's a very, very good question, though. I like that a lot. That's really good. Okay, let's keep going. Jenny Raptor wants to know who would win. Gravedigger versus T-Rex. Oh, I like this. Gravedigger is a big truck. Wow, could T-Rex take on Gravedigger? I don't think so. T-Rex has got some strong teeth, but they're not made for metal. I'm going to give this battle to Gravedigger. I think he runs over T-Rex's foot. T-Rex hops around on one foot screaming, "My foot! My foot!" And then Gravedigger runs over him. The end. Finally, Teddy Raptor Ceratops says, "Dinosaur George, who would win? Protoceratops versus Velociraptor, and thank you." Well, you're welcome, Teddy. Thank you for using good manners. Hey, this is a classic fight because there is a fossil that exists where a Protoceratops and a Velociraptor were locked in battle. They were literally fighting each other when they were buried under a sand slide where like a sand dune slid and buried them, capturing them in that moment and forever being fossilized. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing. It actually shows these two animals fighting. I love Protoceratops. I wish I could say that I think Protoceratops would be the winner. Well, let me rethink this a minute. They find lots of Protoceratops in China. Lots of them in Mongolia and China. That means Protoceratops was a very successful dinosaur. It's living with Velociraptor. If they were easy to kill, we wouldn't find any of them because none of them would have ever reached maturity. So I'm going to back up and say I think Protoceratops wins. I think Protoceratops wins the majority of the time in those battles because if they didn't, we would find lots and lots of Velociraptors, but not many Protoceratops. But it's the opposite. So that then means, in my opinion, that the evidence tells us that Protoceratops was more than capable of handling itself against Velociraptor. All right, everybody, that wraps up this podcast. I hope you all enjoyed listening. Remember, if you're coming to San Antonio, please come out to the Museum at Traders Village and check it out. I think you will enjoy it. If you would like to become a Patreon Club member, you can do that by going to dinosaurgeorge.com. Or you can go completely free to the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group and join us there. Be kind, be nice, stay safe, tell your parents you love them, have fun with your dinosaur books and your dinosaur toys. Yes, I still have dinosaur toys, and I still play with them because I think it's cool. Take care, everybody. Hope to meet you all. See you soon. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Dinosaur George Kids. Join the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group, become a member of our Patreon club, and check out our website store for cool fossils, rocks, and crystals. Visit dinosaurgeorge.com for details. Until next time, keep digging for knowledge. Yeah, yeah.